Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I hope you're enjoying your vacation. You really deserve it, my friend. Hope you're getting some much-needed R&R. All of you out there, go to michaelsavage.com. michaelsavage.com. For the absolute latest must-read sizzling stories you cannot find anywhere else. You're just looking at this list, and you have the May Day movement. Unions and Occupy Wall Street are planning to shut down San Francisco. They're planning to shut down New York. They're planning to shut down over 100 cities tomorrow in a massive communist plot to subvert the United States. We're going to have that and talk about that later in the show. You can go to michaelsavage.com. Go and buy Trickle Down Tyranny if you haven't. I got my copy late last week. I'm going to be reviewing it for the Washington Times. Michael, it is a sizzling read. I can see why it's soaring up the bestseller charts. It's one of the best books I've read in a long, long time. And thank you, my friend, for allowing me to fill in for you tonight. It is always a pleasure. Before we get to the May Day, Occupy Wall Street, sit down tomorrow on May 1st, the issue that is consuming Washington, the issue of this hour, without question, is now the Obama administration's attempt to claim full credit and politicize the death and killing of Osama bin Laden. It began late last week. The president, seeing his poll numbers drop like a stone, has now sent out his surrogates, and in particular Vice President Joe Biden, to now make the claim that had Mitt Romney been the president of the United States, when our Navy SEALs were closing in on Osama bin Laden, that Mitt Romney would not have given the order to assassinate and kill bin Laden, that Barack Obama deserves full credit, full praise for making the decision to take the mastermind of 9/11 out. Here is Biden on Thursday on the campaign stump saying, you know what? Apparently 4 years ago, Mitt Romney said he would not kill Osama bin Laden. Boys, roll the Biden clip.
Governor Romney was asked what he would do about bin Laden. He said, quote, "It's not worth moving heaven and earth, spending billions of dollars just to catch one person."
To put a context to what Joe Biden was saying, because they're obviously exaggerating and skewing the record for their own crass partisan ends. In a debate in 2007, when Romney was first running for the presidency in the Republican primary, which he eventually lost to John McCain, what he said was, it's not worth moving heaven and earth and squandering billions upon billions upon billions of dollars simply to find one man, because killing that one man, Osama bin Laden, will not and would not end the war on terror. You have to fight to win the war, not just focus on one man. But that doesn't matter. Context doesn't matter. The truth doesn't matter. And so on the campaign stump this weekend, Reporters caught up with Mitt Romney, and they asked him point blank, Mr. Governor, would you, if you were president, would you have given the order to kill Osama bin Laden? Yes or no? And here is what Romney said. Boys, roll it.
Of course.
You would have given the order, Governor?
Well, of course. Even Jimmy Carter would have given that order.
I mean, I got to say, that was a good line. I got to give Mitt credit on that one. That was a good line, that even Jimmy Carter would have given the order. And he's right. Jimmy Carter would have given the order. And here is the backstory that nobody in the mainstream media is willing to tell you, the listeners of the Savage Nation and the American people. So I will tell you. Through my sources in the administration and through other press accounts that have slowly leaked out, here is what truly happened. May of last year, when our soldiers, our Navy SEALs, surrounded bin Laden and gunned him down like the dog that he was for the mastermind of the murder of 3,000 Americans on September 11, 2001. Obama is told by Leon Panetta, who was then director of the CIA, Mr. President, we have Osama bin Laden. We have him in our crosshairs. We've located him. He's in a compound in Pakistan. We know where he is. We know the compound. Not only do we know where he is and we know the compound, we know how it's guarded. We know how it's fortified. We have sent in our top Navy SEALs. They're already on their way. Mr. President, they're in crossing Pakistan airspace. They can get him in 45 minutes. We need for you to give us the green light. And instead of saying yes, I want you to think about this, because this is the kind of man we have in the Oval Office. I want you to know who Barack Obama truly is. Instead of saying yes, many of his top advisors are telling him, Mr. President, look at the potential political fallout. What if we don't get him? What if we miss? What if he escapes? It's going to cost you your re-election, Mr. President. Mr. President, the Pakistanis haven't been alerted about this. The Pakistanis, the Musharraf government, could be up in arms. It was a post-Musharraf government. The post-Musharraf government could be up in arms. We could have jihadists being inflamed by this. This could incite terrorist attacks on American troops all over the world, including Afghanistan. Be careful, Mr. President. We may not want to touch this. Panetta is begging the president, Mr. President, we need an order. And here is what he said. Obama says, I will sleep on it. I will sleep on it. You will sleep on it? This man who has the blood of 3,000 Americans on his hands? The greatest war criminal in the world? Who committed the greatest atrocity on American soil in our history? Single act of atrocity? And you're sleeping on it? Next morning, Panetta again is on the door. Mr. President, time is running out. It's been almost 24 hours. Somebody may tip off bin Laden. He may get away. And it was Panetta who practically twisted Barack Obama's arm and said, Mr. President, we need a green light now before it's too late. And finally, under pressure from Panetta and the pressure from the chiefs of staff and the top military brass, this guy finally caves and gives the order. Now, all of a sudden, he's Caesar. Now, all of a sudden, he's George Washington. Now, all of a sudden, he's Harry Truman or Dwight Eisenhower. Now he's the man with the political courage and the guts, the Iron Man, the statesman who killed Osama bin Laden. When he lost his nerves, when he was practically cracking up in the Oval Office because he couldn't make a decision. It's unbelievable, the hypocrisy in this administration. And so again today, with the Japanese Prime Minister by his side at a news conference, the press corps now sensing they could humiliate Romney with this issue, they keep now drumming this issue up. Mr. President, who do you think deserves credit for the killing of Osama bin Laden? Look at how he answers, how he's basically hinting and intimating. You know, if Romney was there, it wouldn't have been Romney. Romney wouldn't have killed him, but I did. Boys, roll the clip.
Your likely opponent says anybody would have made that call, even Jimmy Carter. So I'm curious to see what you would say about that.
As far as my personal role and what other folks would do, I just recommend that everybody take a look at people's previous statements in terms of whether they thought it was appropriate to go into Pakistan and take out bin Laden. I assume that people meant what they said when they said it. That's been at least my practice. I said that I'd go after bin Laden if we had a clear shot at him, and I did. If there are others who have said one thing and now suggest they do something else, then I'd go ahead and let them explain it.
Basically saying Romney wouldn't have done it. Now, let me ask you this. Do you honestly believe that any red-blooded American, where your top military and national security advisors come up to you in the Oval Office, in the White House, any red-blooded American president, and they say, Mr. President, we have Osama bin Laden on a silver platter. We know where he is. Our boys are on the way. They could kill him in 45 minutes. Who would say no? The only guy that would even hesitate is the man currently in the White House. And now he's using this for cheap political purposes, for crass partisan gain, to try to help win himself re-election in 2012. And so my question to you is a simple one. Does Barack Obama deserve credit for the killing of Osama bin Laden? And does it offend you that he and his cronies are trying to politicize it? 1-800-449-8255. 1-800-449-8255 is the number. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
I want to be very clear about what the president believes. You're saying that President Obama believes President Romney wouldn't take that shot.
I don't think it's clear that he would. Again, he criticized Barack Obama a few years ago when Barack Obama said, if we have actionable intelligence about a high-value target, and let's be clear, nobody was bigger, nobody was a more high-value target than Osama bin Laden.
That was Robert Gibbs, campaign advisor, former White House spokesperson, doing the Sunday talk show rounds. Saying, no, Mitt Romney would not have taken the shot. Barack Obama did, and Obama deserves the credit for it. Do you think he deserves the credit for it? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Let's go to Terry in Connecticut on line one. Terry, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
And for your views, I'm all for everything you guys have said. I do not believe that he should deserve the credit solely, no, because the search for Osama began with 9/11, and President Bush was a very strong president as far as trying to root out the evils thereof. So that's my opinion, Mr. Cooner.
Thank you, Terry. And then look, let me be very candid with all of you. I disagree with Obama on practically everything. I don't think there's an issue he and I agree on. However, do I think he deserves partial credit? Yes, he did give the order. In the end, he gave the order. He may have hesitated. He may have slept on it for 24 hours. He may have been cowardly. He may have lost his nerve. But in the end, Panetta forced him and he made the right decision. However, what I think is the height of hypocrisy, to me, the height of phoniness, the height of cynicism, is to get Osama bin Laden. They had to use the very same enhanced interrogation techniques that they criticized. They criticized the surveillance techniques that Bush implemented. So all of those Bush national security policies that led to the killing of Osama bin Laden were criticized by the Democrats, were criticized by Hillary Clinton, and were criticized by Barack Obama. So now, all of a sudden, he's trying to take credit for something that, frankly, the Bush national security apparatus laid the groundwork for. No George Bush, no dead Osama bin Laden. And what about the Navy SEALs? This is, to me, what blows my mind away. Those are the guys that deserve the real credit. It wasn't Barack Obama. He wasn't Rambo. The way the liberal media would spin it, you'd think he personally went down on some kind of a wire with two machine guns, slaughtering everybody in his way to get Osama bin Laden. It was the Navy SEALs who killed him. So, you know, look what he's done. Let's just stand back objectively. What has this man now done? He really has one accomplishment in the last 3.5 years. One, really, one serious, credible accomplishment. Bin Laden is dead. And we Republicans and Democrats, and we conservatives and liberals, we Americans, we are divided on everything. We don't agree on anything. But there's one thing that has unified us. Was that night when the news came out that that barbarian, that butcher, finally got his due and was shot dead. The whole country rang out in celebration. In baseball games, at baseball parks, at bars, people began singing patriotic songs. We were no longer just liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats, red state and blue state. For once in the last 10 years, we were Americans. It was the one thing that unified us. And even this, he's going to politicize. Even this, he's going to use as a cynical attempt to win re-election in November 2012. Mr. President, have you no shame? Do you believe Obama deserves the credit? And does it offend you that he's politicizing it? Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage. We'll take your calls right after this break. 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest on all the important stories of the day. 1-800-449-8255. Here is Republican advisor, former RNC chairman Ed Gillespie, hitting Obama for using the bin Laden killing for solely political purposes come November. Boys, roll clip 11.
This is one of the reasons President Obama has become one of the most divisive presidents in American history. He took something that was a unifying event for all Americans, and he's managed to turn it into a divisive, partisan, political attack. Well, I think most Americans will see it as a sign of a desperate campaign.
I think Gillespie's onto something here. I think this is a sign of desperation. They have nothing else to run on. The economy's in the tank. The deficit is skyrocketing. Inflation is up. We are losing the war in Afghanistan. We've essentially lost the war in Iraq. The Russians are kicking us around. The Chinese are kicking us around. Radical Islam is on the march. Iran is on the verge of a nuclear bomb. And so what does this guy have to run on? Except we killed bin Laden. I got bin Laden. And like a child pointing at Mitt Romney saying, and you wouldn't have gotten him. Nah, 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 nah. You didn't get bin Laden. I did. And Mitt wouldn't have pulled the trigger. That's it. That's all they have is bin Laden and demagoguery. And that's all they're going to campaign on now until November. And so do you find it offensive that the mastermind of 9/11, the greatest war criminal of our time, was shot dead, and the president is trying to say nobody else deserves credit except him and the administration? I want to hear from you. Robert in Portland on line 2, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, Robert.
I feel essentially that everybody knows that Osama bin Laden fell in Obama's lap. It's obvious to everybody, and he could have avoided it by giving President Bush some credit, but no, not a bit. The only thing he gave Bush was blame.
Well, that's it. I mean, Robert, look, you're completely right. He blames Bush. He blames the Republicans. He blames everybody but himself for all of his problems. And this one thing, really, this is the only accomplishment he has. And more than that, look, I don't care about him, really. Believe it or not, in the end, he is nothing more than a corrupt Roman-style emperor. That's all he is. He is drunk with power. I believe he's mad. I believe he's become politically mad. I believe he's become disconnected from reality. He doesn't know what he's talking about on every issue. And he was forced into it, as I pointed out in my opening monologue. Look, the man who got Osama bin Laden was Leon Panetta. Panetta was the only one who kept saying, "We got him, kill him. We got him, give us the green light, Mr. President." So this idea that somehow he's the Dwight Eisenhower of our time, he's this the George Washington of our time, he's the Patton of our time, that he's some brilliant statesman general who killed Osama bin Laden almost single-handedly, that's a figment of the liberal imagination. But on a deeper level, the killing of Osama bin Laden is one of the few things that Americans are able to rally around and galvanize around and unify around. And now you're going to take that into the gutter? Now you're going to politicize even that? Mark my words. Today is April 30th. Mark my words. I believe if he continues to politicize and exploit this issue for crass political purposes, it is going to boomerang against him. He's going to lose independents. He's going to lose moderates. He's going to lose Americans across the political spectrum. And in the end, all of the victory and political capital that he built up from that day will evaporate like smoke in the air. Mark my words, Americans are going to turn against this. They don't like being manipulated and used. That's just my opinion. Take it for what it's worth. James, on line 10, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, good evening, sir. You're right. Americans do not like to be manipulated and used, but we have spent 8 years being manipulated and used by the Bush administration. And you speak of hypocrisy a lot during this talk show, but you know the biggest hypocrites are the ones that are calling your show for the most part because they turned a blind eye to all that Bush did, and now a little glimmer of hope in terms of the war, and Obama speaks of it. No, he speaks of it. And not to personalize as if he did it by himself. No, he is giving credit to all those who participated. But he
No, he didn't. No. Okay, hold on. Let me ask you this. What is it that George Bush did for 8 years, and what is it that the listeners of this show have been propagating for 8 years that is a sign of such blatant hypocrisy, James?
Basically everything that you've been saying this evening.
What did I say that's hypocritical?
You spent so much time, you know, really trying to pigeonhole the president that you really don't give people an opportunity to honestly see all that he has really contributed so far.
You're kidding me. What has he done? What has he done on Afghanistan? What has he done on Afghanistan?
Afghanistan, he came into that situation.
He's been there 3.5 years. Stop blaming Bush. Who ordered the troop surge in Afghanistan? Who ordered 30,000 troops into Afghanistan, James?
You are correct. Oh, he did.
He did. And what did he do? What did he do with those 30,000 troops?
Who was trying to remedy a situation?
He pulled them out. He pulled them out before they accomplished their goals. So there are now thousands of Americans dead in Afghanistan for what? For this man's failed troop surge. Tell me, who's cutting the military, James?
Because
of Bush, right? Bush forces Obama to gut the military. You know, I'm tired of your garbage. You guys blame Bush for everything. He's been in power for nearly 4 years. And in those 4 years, we're at $5 trillion in debt. We have the highest deficits in human history. Unemployment is over 8%. We lost the war in Iraq because of this man. We are dying and bleeding in Afghanistan. 3.5 years. You tell the boys who've died You tell their family members, their wives, their mothers and fathers and husbands why they died for Obama's failed troop surge when he had no strategy for victory. And now he won't cut welfare. He won't cut unemployment insurance. He won't touch Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid. He won't even cut the GSA. All those guys partying in Las Vegas, but he'll cut the military. Oh, that's the one thing he loves to cut, is to disarm America. And then you call up this talk show and say, we're hypocrites? When it was this show, led by Michael Savage, who years ago said, if you don't have a plan for victory in Iraq or Afghanistan, bring the troops home. I said it 3.5 years ago. I said, you don't have a plan for victory, bring them home. So don't stand there and say somehow we're hypocritical. There's only one man to look at, and that's him. Now, he's not going to be judged in 2012 because of what Bush did. Bush is long gone, my friend. He's going to have 4 years to run on. And you know what he's got? Nothing. 1-800-449-8255. Jerry in Wisconsin, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, my comment is, if he's a true leader, he could take credit for Bin Laden, but he better take credit for all his shortfalls, everything that he's destroyed.
Well, and that's my point, Jerry. You're completely right. That's my point. If he was a true leader, why doesn't he come out and say, I ordered a troop surge of 30,000 Americans, and you know what? I'm pulling them back just before November so I can appease my left-wing anti-war base. He won't say that. Now, I ask you, Jerry, and I ask the American people out there, why did those Americans die in the caves and mountains of Afghanistan? If the commander-in-chief is not serious about victory, if he's got no plan for victory, what are we talking about? So our boys are dead. Many of them are coming home crippled and maimed. For what? So he could seem tough in the war on terror and then pull them out like little puppets. You move them in and you move them back just before November. It is disgusting. What we have done in the last 10 years is we have sold out our men and women on the front lines. We had no strategy for victory in Iraq, no strategy for victory in Afghanistan. And so now we're left 10 years later. And let me tell you what nobody else is mentioning, because I'm so sick of these guys in the White House with their propaganda and their garbage. What has happened to Al-Qaeda? Yes, Bin Laden is dead. But what has happened to Al-Qaeda? They have metastasized like a cancer. We didn't break their back. Yes, they're out of Afghanistan. But now they've moved to Yemen. They've moved to Somalia. They've moved into North Africa. They're moving all over the place, preparing even more attacks. They're in Bosnia. They're in Kosovo. You name it, that's where they are. And so instead of going after Al-Qaeda, this guy's doing one victory lap after another. Because for him, it's all about power. It's all about getting reelected. It's his stupid 50% plus one. That's all he wants. 50% plus one come November. Come hell or high water, no matter how he gets it. And so now, we have to hear us. We have to put up with this guy lying to us about how he was this tough statesman who took the big, bold decision. I told Panetta, do it. When Panetta is basically telling everybody and leaking to everybody, this guy won't make a decision. This guy's sleeping. This guy's eating. This guy's working out. I'm begging him. We got him. We got him. We got him. And this guy won't make a decision. Until finally Panetta says enough is enough. He corners him in the Oval Office and he says, I need an answer, up or down. And so finally this guy caves in, this little child. He finally caves in. And so now he's going to use this to win re-election in 2012. It's going to evaporate right in front of his eyes. He's not going to get any credit for it because the American people are going to rightly say, you know what? If you are such of low character, if you are such a demagogue, if you are such a political huckster, such a charlatan, that you're willing to even politicize this instead of giving due credit to Bush, to the National Security Team, to the Navy SEALs, to the military, you didn't take out Bin Laden, Mr. President. I didn't see your hand on the trigger. I didn't see you enter that compound. Yes, you gave the order. But you're not Rambo. I didn't see you go in there and pull and blow this guy's head off. It's going to boomerang against him. Mark my words. And then the one accomplishment he has will turn to zero. George in Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff. Nice talking to you, and enjoy always listening to you. My problem with you giving credit to Obama is that, you know, and that's why you give him credit for him killing bin Laden. But here's the problem. Is he really dead? Because there is no proof out there, to my knowledge, that he is dead.
George, look, that's a very interesting point. Now, I would flip that question. You raise a very provocative and interesting point, but I would flip it. For example, and this is not just conspiracy theory or conspiracy mongering, Angelo Codevilla, who's one of the most respected foreign policy thinkers, a conservative here in Washington, D.C., has written for a couple of years, this was before the bin Laden killing, that bin Laden was dead. That, in fact, he probably died in Tora Bora. He looked at the audio tapes that supposedly bin Laden released. He said they were doctored. They were not bin Laden's voice. You can actually prove it on many of those tapes. And so the question that many people in the Middle East are asking, and many people in Afghanistan and Pakistan are asking, is this. Why not release the photos? I've been asking that question. Why not release the photos of the raid? And more than that, why didn't they show us the body? Why were they in such a rush to bury this man's body at sea? First of all, they say it's to respect Muslim tradition that his body has to be clean and buried within 24 hours. You kill 3,000 Americans, you've lost that privilege, my friend. Okay? I don't care about your religious heritage. I don't care about your ceremony. I don't care about you having to be cleaned and buried within 24 hours. That body should have been brought back to Washington so the American people could see it for themselves. And who it offended and who it bothered, I don't care. But instead, there's no body. There are no images. There are no photos. In fact, the administration comes out again over the weekend and says, no, we're not going to release any more photos or images. Why not? That was paid for by us. We were the ones that suffered on 9/11. We're the ones that are bearing the brunt in the war on terror. That was our victory. We want to see the pictures of this man dead and how that raid was conducted. Mr. President, we don't work for you. You work for us. Show us the pictures. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. It's a freewheeling Monday. Do you think Mitt Romney would have ordered the killing of Osama bin Laden? Do you think Barack Obama deserves full credit for having killed bin Laden? And are you offended that he's trying to politicize the issue? I want to hear from you. Bob in New York, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, how are you? I have four quick points. So one thing I always thought is that we always kind of knew where he was. How far, you know, from, all the way back from when Clinton was told where he was, you can track somebody fairly easily in today's with the satellites and whatnot. I think Obama was low in the polls. He took a come what may attitude and said, you know what, let's take him out. The reason why no one had done that possibly beforehand was because that could have been a recruiting point for al-Qaeda, fighting 150,000 al-Qaeda. Maybe you would have been fighting, you know, 150 million al-Qaeda.
No, no, but I mean, Bob, look, you make a very, very good point. Osama bin Laden has now become a martyr to many radical Islamists all over the world. There's no question about it. Killing him has turned him into a martyr. And Clinton could have killed him. And this is what people often forget about it. They often forget this key point, is that in the 1990s, the Sudanese government had Osama bin Laden. And they, in fact, contacted the Clinton administration. And they said, "Do you want him?" And they said, "No, we're not interested." So we could have taken out Osama bin Laden 15, 16 years ago when he declared war on America. And then he started to bomb our embassies. And then he bombed the USS Cole. And we still ignored him. And then finally 3,000 Americans died on September 11th. So these very same liberals who are celebrating Barack Obama, who are celebrating the Democrats, who are celebrating Bill Clinton, they could have taken this guy out 15 years ago. They didn't. And how many Americans have had to pay because of that tragic mistake? Thousands upon thousands upon thousands. And now the genie's out of the bottle. This man, Osama bin Laden, mark my words, said to his advisors, "I will bring the great Satan America to its knees because I will hit them in their homeland. And that will force them to come into Afghanistan. And we will bleed them there as we bled the Russians." And that's exactly what he's done. 10 years later, we're still there, we're still dying, and there's no light at the end of the tunnel. I ask you, who really won? Obama or bin Laden? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight, taking some much-needed R&R. I'll be filling in for him. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest stories. Frankly, some of these stories you really cannot find anywhere else. Trickle Down Tyranny is Michael's latest book. I just got my review copy late last week. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, congratulations. It is a masterpiece. I am inhaling it. I am devouring it. I hope to write a review in the Washington Times soon. And I just want to congratulate you, my friend, on an absolute superbly written and really, really well done book. We've been talking about Obama politicizing the killing of Osama bin Laden, whether he should take the full credit for it. As he does this, as he gears up for his re-election bid in a desperate attempt to retain his grip on power, tomorrow is May Day. On the top right-hand corner of michaelsavage.com, you will find a story that every patriotic American should read and understand fully, because it is about the communist plot, the socialist attempt in this country to subvert our fundamental way of life, our institutions, and the very existence of America. May 1st is traditionally the day when international workers' movements all over the world hold rallies. It was there, going back decades, implemented by the communists to help raise awareness for this supposedly coming workers' paradise. But tomorrow it will be a different May Day. Not only will the unions be out in full force, not only will the communists be out in full force, but tomorrow starting at 8 a.m. in downtown New York and then spreading to over 100 cities across America and then around the world, in London, Paris, Berlin, Tokyo, you name it, Occupy Wall Street will now join the Workers' Day protests and rallies. They are now calling for a massive mother-of-all sit-down strikes. They are calling for traffic to be stalled. They want to block bridges and tunnels in New York, in San Francisco, in Chicago, in L.A., in Philadelphia, you name it, they want to block it. And their goal is to prevent Americans from getting to work. And they are urging all Americans to either go out on strike for one day, if they cannot strike, to call in sick. If they can't call in sick, to deliberately slow down their work schedule and work habits throughout the day. They're demanding that students pull out of schools. They are demanding that every union go out and protest. They are calling for mass rallies everywhere. They want to bring America to its knees, traffic to its knees, work to its knees, shipping to its knees, commerce to its knees. Mayor Michael Bloomberg has said that if there is violence, if there is out-of-control behavior and bedlam, that, quote, there will be a severe and strict response. Mayors are now girding for the worst. And my question to all the anarchists, the hippies, the socialists, the communists, the venomous anti-capitalists that dominate the Occupy Wall Street movement, who do you think you're helping? The 99% of which I'm a part, of which most of the savage listeners are a part, we need to get to work. We have families to feed. We have bills to pay. How does it help us that traffic is shut down? How does it help us that we can't get to do our jobs? How does this help us? All it does is it angers, embitters people, turns them against Occupy Wall Street. And more than that, it prevents us from earning our daily wage. It prevents us from providing a living and putting bread on the table for our families. This, my friends, is nothing short of treason. Yes, people have a right to protest. Don't get me wrong. It is a fundamental First Amendment right. But what's been happening with Occupy Wall Street is not just simple protests, is not just peaceful rallies. Going back since last year, they have destroyed public property. They have destroyed Starbucks and McDonald's. They have destroyed buildings. People have been raped. People have been killed. Cops have been shot at. Cop cars, forgive me, I don't mean to be too graphic, but I have to speak the truth. Cop cars have been urinated on and defecated upon. In Oakland, they practically burned down the port. Truckers were not able to deliver or pick up their goods. Many of them were harassed. These are working class men and women. These are people who don't make very much money. Nobody's more working class than a truck driver. And yet, you look at all these people in the Occupy Wall Street movement, the overwhelming majority of them are college educated or in college, spoiled little brats. sprinkled in with a couple of aging baby boomers looking to relive the glory days of the 1960s. I've attended some of these rallies. You can smell the marijuana. You can see the drugs being used and peddled. You can see that many of them, frankly, don't shower. Do us all a favor and take a bath. Maybe then we could even bother to listen to your arguments because we're not so busy holding our noses or turning the other way because the stench is so bad. Many of them simply don't want to go to school, or they have been indoctrinated with this Marxist-Leninist propaganda against the United States, against capitalism, against the rich, against the wealthy. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not a globalist conservative. I do not believe in open borders. I do not believe in free trade. And I don't believe in bailouts for the shyster bankers who have been ripping the American people off. I'm not a shill for corporate America and never have been. But however, don't blame the banks when the problem is the government. Don't blame the banks when it's the Clinton administration that came out with one regulation after another, telling the banks, lend, lend, lend. In fact, ordering the banks, lend, lend, lend. That's what created the housing bubble. That's what created all this frenzy, people buying homes they had no business owning, and then the whole thing collapsed. It's Obama that's been bailing out the rich. It's Obama that's been bailing out the banks. It's Obama that's been bailing out the car companies. So if you're looking for somebody to blame, blame the White House. Blame the Obama administration. They're in bed with the banks. They're in bed with Wall Street. They're in bed with corporate America. They're in bed with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who have put the American taxpayer on the hook for billions and billions and billions of dollars, while this debt is being imposed upon us. These bailouts are being financed by us. Instead, it's blame corporations. It's blame capitalism. It's blaming greed. Capitalism didn't cause this problem. Government did. Liberal policies did. And instead of taking accountability for what they've done, instead of saying, you know what? I am responsible for these runaway deficits. I am responsible for propping up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. I'm the one that's responsible for dispensing all of this TARP money to my friends on Goldman Sachs through Timothy Tax Cheat Geithner, my Treasury Secretary. What does Obama do? On the eve of the May 1st massive rally planned by Occupy Wall Street, he pours gas on the fire. He gives another speech today at the Hilton Hotel in Washington, telling labor unions that they're being shafted by the, quote, 1%. That it's the rich that are getting away like bandits with tax cuts, but the Republicans want to take away their rights and their benefits. That the unions are being shafted by the rich and the Republicans. He's playing the class warfare card. Pouring gas on the fire, inciting passions and tensions even more, giving a backdoor legitimacy to what is going to take place tomorrow. Why doesn't the president condemn it? Why doesn't the president come out and say, look, you want to protest, I understand, but don't block traffic. Don't block the bridges. Don't block the tunnels. Don't leave the schools. Don't shut down the classrooms. People have to get to work. People have to study. People have to learn. No, 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 no. He's silent. He won't say a word. And neither will Nancy Pelosi or Dirty Harry Reid. Nobody says anything. And so my question to you is a simple one. Do you believe that the Occupy Wall Street movement, does the Occupy movement speak for you? Do they speak for you and represent your values? Or do you believe they are going to prevent you from being able to earn a living tomorrow? Do they speak for you or against you. 1-800-449-8255. I am asking the 99%, does the Occupy Wall Street movement speak for you or against you? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times filling in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Tomorrow is May Day, May 1st. Occupy Wall Street is going to be holding a series of strikes all across the country and in capitals around the world. Traffic will be blocked. Streets, bridges, tunnels. Do they speak for you or do they speak against you? I want to hear from you, members of the Savage Nation. Andrew in Albany on line 3, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, good evening, sir. I just wanted to comment that I don't think that Mitt would have taken out Osama bin Laden. Now, listen to me, what I mean by that is that just the basic knowledge of understanding how terrorist networks work with their covert communications, and they're a lot of times people that are in a terrorist group don't even know who their leaders are. So the CIA and all our other covert groups that are tracking down leads and tracking down communication networks of Osama bin Laden knew many of his tentacles reached as far into the Sudan, all around the world, communicating with him. And what our job was to cut off those communications, cut his tentacles, keep him as basically useless as possible as a leader or as a figurehead, but keep him basically in power. That way, if you did kill him, it's well known in your covert society, basically people that track down these terrorists, that you create this huge power struggle. So instead of taking the easy way out and just killing the guy and getting all this political gain, I think just like George Bush knew that Osama bin Laden, unless they were complete idiots, anybody in the covert field probably knew with SCI or really top secret clearance, knew that this guy was living there and was tracking down leads as they communicated with him. And that's just...
No, that's a very good point, Andrew. I mean, look, to me, there's a couple scandals. One of them is, here you have bin Laden in a military compound staring at the Pakistani version of West Point. He's right near Pakistan's National Military University. He's right there. He can see it. It's right there. So nobody's going to tell me that the Pakistanis and their intelligence services didn't know where bin Laden was. They knew and they were sheltering and hiding him. So the Pakistanis were covering up for him. So why are we giving them billions of dollars a year in aid? It's disgusting. It's revolting. But on a deeper level, look, I want bin Laden dead. I wanted him dead. Don't get me wrong. But you cut off the head, another one takes its place. The issue is not bin Laden. It's his terror network. And what nobody is talking about is, yes, bin Laden is dead, but Al-Qaeda is thriving. It's in Pakistan. It's entrenched in Yemen. It's spread to Somalia. It's spread to Sudan. It's now found its way into Libya, thanks to Obama's criminal war against Gaddafi. They're now part of the ruling regime in Libya. So Al-Qaeda is spreading its tentacles everywhere. And again, I have to ask this question. Who won, bin Laden or Obama? 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, for the absolute latest must-read stories. May Day is coming down tomorrow. A massive, massive call by Occupy Wall Street to shut down traffic, to cause chaos. They will descend upon the financial district in New York. Many banks, the police, even the mayor of New York, Michael Bloomberg, are gearing up for possible violence. Do they speak for you or do they speak against you? I want to hear from you. 1-800-449-8255. Derek in New York on line 8. Thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi. Yes, I'm a hardworking man, and I just think this is completely ridiculous what these people are doing. You know, I'm not a millionaire by any means, but I mean, these people, none of them even have jobs. They're in there. They're wasting their time. They're wasting everybody's time. It just sickens me. It's just a slap in the face to free enterprise.
Derek, you're right, but it's more than that. You're right. But it's more than a slap to free enterprise. It's a slap to the American people. It's a slap to our democracy. It's a slap to the ordinary workers out there, to the middle class, to the working class. And you put your finger on it. Many of them don't hold jobs. They're professional agitators. They're people on the payroll of George Soros or Van Jones or MoveOn.org. Those are the guys that are... Have you ever wondered, the media never asks this question, who's paying for all those buses that bus these people in? Who's paying for their food? Who's paying for their tents? Who's paying for all that stuff? No one ever asks that question. Many of them are college students living off their parents' money, living on their parents' dime. I mean, we've tried this in Cambodia. They've tried this in North Korea. There are no bankers in North Korea. There are no corporations in North Korea. How's that working out for all the poor people in North Korea? These people have no knowledge of history, no knowledge of economics, frankly, no logic. And I have a theory. I believe a lot of these people, in fact, I know, I don't believe it, I've seen it. You do enough cocaine, you do enough marijuana, if you're stoned all day, sitting on your parents' couch and watching television, then you think if you destroy some buildings and demonize the bankers and cause bedlam, mayhem, and chaos, that somehow you're bringing about a social revolution, that somehow you're bringing about some kind of social justice. When all you're doing is you're hurting the city, you're hurting the poor workers and ordinary men and women who have to get to work and get a paycheck. And in the end, what have you accomplished? Nothing. It's like a bunch of spoiled teenagers. You destroy, destroy, destroy. And you build nothing. And the man that's going to profit from this politically, I believe, is Barack Obama. I believe he wants this chaos. He wants these street protests. He wants Americans up in arms. He wants to create more division and dissension. He wants to create as much chaos as possible so that he can politically benefit from this and use this as a wedge issue to somehow paint the Republicans as defending the, quote, 1%, while he stands on the side of the 99%. But what he won't tell you is that Obama is part of the 1%. I didn't make $16 million between 2006 and 2011. I don't peddle memoirs. I don't use public office for personal gain. I don't hang out with the Hollywood elite. I'm not a multimillionaire numerous times over the way Obama and his wife is. I don't go on taxpayer-funded trips. I don't hit Hawaii. I don't hit Cartagena, Colombia. I don't hit Martha's Vineyard. Last trip Michelle Obama took, that cost you, the taxpayer, $467,000. Oh, that's a nice way to party, isn't it? Nice way to party it up there. Bringing her friends, their children, Secret Service, go on a nice private jet, get the whole hotel for yourself, go out to five-star dinners, partying it up on the beach, get yourself the latest fashion. I don't see them complaining about Queen Antoinette. Michelle, I don't see them complaining about Michelle, Queen Antoinette. I don't see them complaining about the dear leader. No, 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 no. It's Mitt Romney. It's the Republicans. It's the bankers. My friends, these are idiots masquerading as somehow social justice advocates when in the end, all they want is one thing, the destruction of America as we know it. Nate in Wisconsin, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, these people on Wall Street, the protesters, they're not the 99%. They're the 1%. That's all that's there. There's just a lot of noise-making 1%ers that would like to join the rest of us as the 99%.
Nate, look, they're losers. No, you nailed it. They're losers. That's what they are. They're misfits. They're losers. They're people who, frankly, can't do well in school. Obviously, have taken too much drugs. Damages their brain. Can't take a bath. I go to these rallies all the time in D.C. You wouldn't believe the riffraff. You wouldn't believe it. The green hair, the pink hair, the mohawks, the stench, the smell, the earrings, the tattoos from head to toe. You wouldn't believe it. You wouldn't believe what you see. And what I find most despicable, you find one person at a Tea Party rally that says one slightly racist thing. Racist. Racist. Then there's Anderson Cooper, the guy with the silver hair running around. Racist, racist. Rachel Maddow. Racist, racist. Al Sharpton. He's going berserk on MSLFBC. Racist, racist. The whole Tea Party's racist. Sarah Palin's racist. Everybody's racist. Mitt Romney's racist. Newt Gingrich is racist. Everybody's racist. Racist, racist, racist. Women have been raped. At some of these, people have been killed. Property has been destroyed. Windows smashed. Riots in Oakland. They practically razed the port to the ground. The most liberal mayor in America, maybe, the mayor of Oakland, said, leave. We don't want you here anymore. You're costing us millions of dollars. Nothing. Not a peep. Not even a peep from the liberal media. Nothing. Cop cars defecated on, urinated on, police officers attacked. Nothing. Nothing. But you have one poster of Obama's face painted as the Joker, which just means that he's the evil one opposing Batman. Ku Klux Klan? Racist neo-Nazis? Hitler? Hitler! We have fascists in our midst. Paul Krugman in the New York Times. We have Christian fundamentalists in America. Neo-Nazis on the verge of taking down the government. It's going to be like a burning down the Reichstag in Germany in 1933. A new Hitler is coming from our midst. This is now the Tea Party movement. It's unbelievable, the hypocrisy and double standards. I've gone to Tea Party rallies. It's clean. It's ordinary people. They wave flags. They have a don't tread on me. They're respectful. Speakers come up. They speak. They get a little rowdy. It's their right. It's a peaceful rally. They get a little boisterous. They clap. They chant. A couple of nice speeches. They pick up after themselves. The garbage is all cleaned up. It's cleaner when they leave than before they came. Nobody gets shot. Nobody gets raped. Nobody's getting urinated or defecated upon. But no, 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 no. The radical right. The radical right. What are these people? They're communists. They're extremists. They're anarchists. They're America haters. They're criminals. And yet the media says nothing. Robert in New York, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, you are right, and they do not represent me, but they represent the younger generations, and you and I are lone voices. We're crying in the wind. We're going to lose this battle.
I hope you're wrong, Robert. What makes you think we're going to lose this battle?
The younger people today are not interested in the things. They're going to laugh at Romney, and Obama's going to get in because he's talking Greek philosophy. He's talking mom baseball and apple pie, and you're right, and Savage is right, but the younger people are going to laugh at us, and they're not interested in these things anymore. These are bygone values. Obama's sitting in the White House laughing because it's a slam dunk for him.
Robert, look, I hope you're wrong. Look, my prediction is this. I think Obama will lose, and the reason why he will lose is because the country is in such dire straits. He has broken the back of America, and it's going to get worse. Unemployment's going to go up. Inflation is going to go up. Gas prices are going to go up. We're now coming into the driving season. People are going to start hitting their summer vacations. When they see how much they got to pay at the pump, especially now, with a war looming in Iran, I think the American people are going to chase this guy out of office. But you make a deeper point. Starting in May, there is a series in Washington, May and June, where they bring in high school students from all across the country. And these people, these are students that come in and they want to see debates between liberals and conservatives. What is a liberal? What is a conservative? And so I often, for free, I often give speeches in front of these high school students, their debates, really, and I debate a liberal. You are right. The youth are fleeing the bedrock values of this country in droves. I look at them, and I honestly feel sorry for many of them. They are all for abortion. They are all for promiscuous sex. They don't believe in marriage. The only marriage they believe in is gay marriage. That, for them, is the only marriage that counts. They despise and ridicule and laugh at patriotism. They have been indoctrinated in the values of socialism, big government, global warming. Every single one of them, there are almost to a man and a woman, almost every single one of them believe that there are only four mortal sins. It's not greed. It's not pride. It's not lust. Nothing like that. It's racism, it's sexism, it's homophobia, and nativism. That's all they're indoctrinated with. You want to protect the borders? Nativist. You're opposed to gay marriage? Homophobic. You believe we should all be equal under the law and you oppose affirmative action? Racist. You oppose Obama? Racist. It's unbelievable. You don't believe in free contraception for women, that women should actually pay for their own contraception? sexist pig. You're a sexist pig. Those are the only mortal sins that they know. Outside of that, it's fair game. They hate their country. They hate our Constitution. They don't even know what's said in the Constitution. They know absolutely nothing about the world that they live in. They are literally the product of indoctrination camps. They have taken God out of the schools, the Bible out of the schools, the Ten Commandments out of the schools. Most of them have almost no consciences whatsoever. You have no idea when I talk to these kids, and they go, well, gay marriage. I go, well, marriage is between a man and a woman. Why? Because it's been like that for thousands of years. Because men and women are supposed to procreate. And then you see you have children. And then you see you raise and socialize these children. That's why you support marriage. And I say, if you support gay marriage, why not polygamy? Why not bigamy? Why not, let's say, what the Muslims practice? One man, four wives. Why stop at gay marriage? You know what often their answer to me is? Who cares? If you want to have polygamy, have it. We don't care. Their answer to everything is two words. Why not? And that's why I believe if we do not fundamentally reverse course, if we do not fundamentally defend the traditional institutions of America, we will go the way of ancient Rome. And tomorrow, these communists who attempted to take over Western society, who plotted their revolution 100 years ago, are now close to achieving their victory. Look at everywhere and everything around us. You ask me, how much are we paying in taxes? how much is the government now intervening in every aspect of our lives? And I ask you, have the Marxists not made serious inroads? Are we not on the verge of becoming a socialist country? Tomorrow, you are going to see the shock troops of Obama's socialist revolution, and they're going to strand you and your family and your friends in your cars as you try to get to work to pay for these government programs that Obama is imposing upon us. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Alex in Florida, you're on the air, my friend.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Alex, you're on.
Thank you. First I want to make sure that I can express my point thoroughly before we start to try to counteract, because I feel like I might push a little awkward, a few awkward buttons.
Come on, Alex, go.
The Occupy in my area, and they actually do a lot of political action. Whenever we had session here in Tallahassee, they were going and speaking with representatives and actually voicing the things that the local public wanted them to address. In terms of Occupy as a whole, I think it's kind of hard, being that it's a people's movement, to lump them all together. I realize that in a lot of movements like this, you do get a lot of random travelers, and there is a lot of drugs and things like that going on, and then there's a lot of anarchists, too, who have a tendency to go and vandalize things, but I think it's dangerous territory to kind of just lump all of the occupants in one particular category. I feel like...
Alex, let me ask you this. I take it you're a member of the Occupy movement, correct?
Not necessarily, but I have been following very closely just because I...
You're sympathetic. Would it be fair to say you're sympathetic?
I'm sorry?
Would it be fair to say you're sympathetic?
Empathetic. I think in...
Empathetic, okay. What does the Occupy movement want? What are its goals? Tell me, what does it want? What is its goal?
My interpretation of it is kind of a truth revolution. I feel like there's a lot of things that have been going on kind of behind the scenes that the American...
evolution. Okay, but in the end, once you've evolved to the truth, what is that truth? What is the goal?
Exposure of how the political system actually works.
Of how the political system actually works. That's a goal.
That's the thing. The fact of the matter is, this is kind of a generational move. This is things that have been happening for a very, very long period of time. It covers...
I understand. It's generational. It's been going on for a long time. It's been building. What is the goal?
I feel like the end goal, I feel like it's to begin the dialogue that needs to be happening in this country.
To begin the dialogue that needs to happen. Alex, let me ask you, how old are you, Alex?
I'm 20.
You're 20. Let me ask you an honest question. I'm not trying to demean you. Do you use drugs?
No.
You've never used drugs?
Oh, I can't say that I've never used drugs.
Okay. No, because Alex, look, you make no sense. Movements have clear goals and aims. This is nothing. It is nothing more than a form of vanity, self-absorption. I ask you for goals. You can't give me any because you have none. The Occupy Wall Street has none except chaos for the sake of chaos. Now, my point is a simple one. Go home to your parents, finish your studies, get a job, and make something of yourself. Stop being a pest. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com, to read the latest stories. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to thank you for the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. I can't tell you what a joy and pleasure it's been. Congratulations once again on your latest book. It is an absolute blockbuster, a masterpiece. I'm practically wrapping it up right now. I got it late last week and should be writing a review on it very, very shortly. To all of you out there, stay tuned. Later on in this hour, we were going to talk about the Obama's reigniting the war on women. You're not going to believe some of the comments that he's made recently at the Women's Leadership Forum. The sparks are flying. The gender wars have now been triggered once again. We will have that and so much more. But first, we're going to do something we don't normally do here on the Savage Nation. I want to continue talking about some of the issues we've touched on the last couple of hours. Do you think the administration is politicizing the killing of Osama bin Laden? Are you offended by it? Do you think Obama deserves the full credit for it? And tomorrow is May Day, where many communists, anarchists, socialists, anti-capitalists in the Occupy Wall Street movement are going to stage the mother of all sit-ins. They are going to block traffic, bridges, tunnels, streets. They're going to try to shut down schools. There are going to be rallies held all over the country. The financial district in Manhattan is going to come under siege. And at 8 p.m., there is going to be, quote, an after party that's going to take place. Many in law enforcement are fearing the worst. Mayors are now girding up for potential mass riots. Is this helping you? Does the Occupy Wall Street movement speak for you? You, the members of the 99%, is this what you want done in your name? Or, frankly, are they speaking against you and hurting your interests? I want to continue this conversation on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Justin in Modesto, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I was just calling because, you know, I'm younger, about 27. I heard one of your callers say that, you know, the Occupy movement represents the younger generation. And I know that a lot of people my age who are younger than the generation I come from what the points you touched on, the dumbing down in the schools, the teaching of no moral virtue, and that's a lot of, you know, that's the product that we get. But they don't represent me. The Occupy movement doesn't represent me. This isn't the way I think. You know, I believe in American capitalism. I believe in a free society. I don't believe selling out and giving up your rights just for a handout like they want. You know, all these people out there crying about daycare. Well, go get a job. That's what I do. I work. I don't have the best jobs, but I get out there and work. And I have ideas. And I pursue.
And Justin, listen, and that's why you're going to succeed in life. I'm telling you. This is not just Jeff Cooner's opinion. Statistically, it has been proven that if you graduate high school, get married and then have children, in other words, raise a family the way people have always raised families, and you want to work, it is almost statistically impossible to be poor in America. What American capitalism has done is something that philosophers used to dream of. We have cured poverty. Capitalism, let me repeat this because it's a very key point. American capitalism has cured poverty. Now, You have to work. You have to practice self-initiative. It doesn't come to you overnight. But if you stay married, stay faithful to your husband or your wife or your spouse, you raise a family, you graduate from high school, you get basic skills, and you want to apply yourself, you will not be poor in America. That's what we've accomplished. And what I don't understand is when I look at these college students that form the ranks, let's put it this way, the backbone, the base of the Occupy movement, they're spoiled rich kids. They're spoiled middle class kids. And since when do they think they're entitled to a job? Since when are they entitled to low interest rates on their student loans? Pay your own loans. You made the loan. You took out the loan. Now do what Americans have done for generations. Pay it back. You know, a high school education, and especially a college education, is not a right. You don't have a right to a degree. It's a privilege. It's a privilege to be admitted. It's a privilege to take those courses. It's a privilege to have the leisure time to actually study and better yourself. Most people around the world could only dream of that. So since when are you entitled to cheap housing? Since when are you entitled to a welfare check? Since when are you entitled to a bank giving you a loan? Or to you getting an education? Or to somebody paying off your student loans? Because you see, the point is this. When they get cheap student loans, it's not free. Quote, free. You pay for it. The government puts money away from taxpayer money to pay for or underwrite student loans. So somebody else, you know, think about this. And I used to argue this for years. I went to school with a lot of kids. They were called ethnics. I'm an ethnic myself, meaning my parents came off the boat. All right? So my parents were immigrants. Most of my friends were immigrants, or their parents were immigrants. Croatians, Italians, Serbs, Greeks, Poles, the Irish. Those were basically the people that I hung out with at school. Many of them, and God bless them, were good, decent, hardworking people. But they didn't want to go to college. They weren't meant for college. They worked in construction. They ended up working in factories. They wanted a job. And they got married and had a family. Now, I would often say this to my elitist liberals when I was in graduate school. Why should some working schmuck, through his hard-earned labor and the sweat off his brow in the factories or on a construction site, have to underwrite and pay for your education or your cheap student loan? Your father's a doctor. Your father's a lawyer. Your father's an engineer. Your father's a government bureaucrat. You pay your own loan. Don't ask that poor working class schmuck whose parents came off the boat for him to pay for your college education. It's not right. Pay your own way. Carry your own water. Now, what? These rich kids that are now complaining, you don't have a right to a job. You're lucky to be in university. Shut up, study, make something of yourself, and go out and get it. If you think you're worth $50,000 a year or $75,000 a year, then go out and get it. But stop blaming somebody else because you're not getting what you think you're entitled to. And that's what's destroying this country. Childcare, daycare, healthcare, unemployment, welfare, cheap student loans, cheap housing, everybody, a job. Everybody's entitled to everything. I'm sorry, you're not. And that's not the world. This system is going to go bankrupt. It's crashing down around us. The communist Chinese, they don't have free healthcare. They don't give out student loans like it's candy. They understand this is economic reality. The communists have even figured that out. My friends, there is no future with this Occupy Wall Street movement. It's a bunch of spoiled, self-indulgent, drug-addicted brats who somehow think because they can puff it up and get stoned on the couch and go to some elitist school that they're entitled to everything. Well, they're not. And it's about time we, the American people, said enough is enough. David in Victorville, I believe. Thanks for holding.
I respectfully disagree with the purpose of a lot of the people being there at the protests. When I've gone to some of the local ones, it's to protest the wholesale destruction of this great country and the economy that we had. And I'm not talking about capitalism. That's a good system. You make a product, make a little bit on each piece, and you can make a fortune. But what I'm protesting is when they're sending these all of our jobs overseas, they're exploiting overpopulated countries where they're willing to work for extremely substandard wages. But then they bring that product back over here and expect all of us people who are out of manufacturing jobs to consume the products. And I live in Palm Springs, and I've got friends in the real estate industry, and they said the multi-million dollar second homes are selling like hotcakes, and 99% are cash deals. What they're protesting is how the rich are getting extremely rich, and the poor are getting extremely poor, and the gap is widening as we speak. That is what I would protest. You're going to get some hippies show up, but you're getting a lot of people that go to apply for a job, and there's 400 to 500 people for a part-time bagger's job at a grocery store.
Well, I mean, David, look, hold on. There are some good jobs out there. I know this for a fact because I have friends who've been looking and they found some. You are dead right about the manufacturing jobs being lost. You are dead right about the crony capitalism that is destroying this country. The crony capitalism, the crony socialism. You're completely right about that. That's not what Occupy Wall Street is about. That's the problem. The Tea Party is what's been complaining about this. The Tea Party has been saying, end the criminal nexus between big government and big business and big labor. End all of that, because that's what's destroying America. What Occupy Wall Street is essentially saying is this: you soak the rich, you destroy the banks, you destroy corporations, and somehow you'll have a socialist utopia. Now, just look at tomorrow. I mean, to me, that's, you want, in essence, here's the difference between the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. The Tea Party protests peacefully, legally. They get a permit. They do no damage. They don't shoot anybody. They don't rape anybody. They don't defecate on anybody. They clean up after themselves. And then they influence the political process. That's why Michael supports them. It's why I support them. It's why every conservative nationalist supports the Tea Party movement. And then you have Occupy Wall Street. They don't try to get involved in the political process. They want to wreck the political process. They don't protest peacefully. They burn. They destroy. They shoot. They pillage. They plunder. Look, I got to get to work tomorrow in Washington, D.C. It's already enough traffic as it is. I'm not going to be able to get to work tomorrow because these drug-addicted losers are standing there blocking traffic with their dumb drums, smoking dope on the sidelines, on the sidewalks, and standing there and saying, down with the rich, down with the rich. I got a family to feed. I got mouths to feed. I got bills to pay. You're shafting me and everybody else that's going to work. And that's what they want. They see Greece. They see the anarchists running out of control in Greece. And they say, that's what we want to come to America. That's what Soros wants. That's what Obama wants. And that's what the left has been scheming for decades. Create enough division, enough upheaval, that then you have to bring in a socialist strongman to impose order. That's been the game plan from the get-go, and they're following it to a T. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. Dave in Virginia, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Jeff. Look, I got a different perspective on this Wall Street hold up on the highway deal. I got a family member that has requires medical attention, goes back and forth to the hospital, is on oxygen, and if the highways get held up and my family member runs out of oxygen on the road, he could die. Now, I'm in concern for him, but what about other people in other rescue situations that aren't going to be able to make it to hospitals and rescue squads and other kinds of things? Because I work in that type of field, and that's a big concern for me. And I protest what these protesters are doing. I think it's wrong. I don't think they're giving any thought. It goes beyond the job market and holding up the job in the capital system. It goes beyond what they're aiming for. It's going to affect a lot of lives in a lot more ways than what
they are putting people's lives in jeopardy. They are threatening the public interest. And that's why I'm telling you I would not allow them to do it. I think this is an illegal, immoral, and unlawful rally and sit down, massive strike. And if I were the mayors, I wouldn't put up with it. But that's me. Craig in Texas, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, good to talk to you.
Hey, Craig, I got about a minute. Go, baby.
All right. Hey, I think the problem with the liberals is just that they're hiding a lot of the morals and principles that this nation was founded upon. I feel it's really hurting a lot of the younger generation. And I've been listening to your phone call. I am part of that younger generation.
Liberalism is killing the youth. It is killing the working class. And in the end, it will kill America itself. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. Recently, President Obama spoke at the Women's Leadership Forum. And rather than backing away from the phony contraceptive mandate, rather than backing away from his trumped-up, manufactured war on women, the president is doubling down. The president is now trying to gin up his base, to gin up the feminists in this country by trying to somehow pretend that the Republicans want to wage a jihad against women, against their contraception rights, and against birth control. And for all of you that haven't been following this closely, the issue began a couple months ago when Obama's Health and Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius, issued a mandate forcing and compelling every major religious institution, specifically Catholic institutions, churches, schools, hospitals, charities, that they would have to provide health care and, in particular, contraception, free birth control, along with drugs that induce abortions to all of their employees, even if it means violating their conscience rights, even if it means violating their fundamental religious tenets and beliefs. It is an assault upon Christianity. It is an assault upon the First Amendment. It is an assault upon religious liberty. I have never, frankly, seen something so tyrannical, sweeping, and anti-Christian in my lifetime. And instead of backing away, as the Catholic bishops, one by one, as Protestant preachers, as Jewish rabbis, as Muslim imams came out of the woodwork saying this assaults our very conscience rights, it is a moral abomination, you cannot force us against our will to provide free birth control and abortion-inducing drugs. You cannot force us to do this. President Obama, you are not the Pope of the Roman Catholic Church. Pope Benedict is, not you. He doubles down. This guy's incredible. And so he goes in front of the Women's Leadership Forum and he says, you know what? Why would the Republican Party, why would conservatives oppose this contraceptive mandate? I thought they were for freedom. Why do they want to regulate women's health? They want to interfere with women's bodies. They're not true libertarians. They're not true believers in freedom. I am. Boys, roll clip 12.
This contraception fight, in particular, was illuminating. It was like being in a time machine. Republicans in Congress were going so far as to say an employer should be able to have a say in the health care decisions of its female employees. And I'm always puzzled by this. This is a party that says it prides itself on being rabidly anti-regulation. These are folks who claim to believe in freedom from government interference and meddling. But it doesn't seem to bother them when it comes to women's health.
So let me get this straight. Because we don't want to pay for somebody else's birth control, suddenly now we're hypocrites? Since when does Sandra Fluke and all the other liberal feminists out there, since when do they have a right to free birth control, Mr. Obama? That's the issue. Why should the Roman Catholic Church or the Southern Baptists or Orthodox Jewish synagogues or whoever have to pay for somebody else's free birth control? Now, look, I'm a sexual libertarian. I'm a Catholic. I'm a moral traditionalist. I'm a devout Christian. Yes, I believe in the sanctity of marriage and family. I believe promiscuity, especially outside of marriage, is wrong. But that's your business. What you do in the privacy of your own bedroom, none of the state's business. But don't ask me to pay for it. If you want to take the pill, if you want to have glow-in-the-dark condoms, if you want to use spermicide jellies, whatever you want to use, that's your business. But don't ask me to pay for it. Now, Sandra Fluke is a grown woman. I thought women are supposed to be adults and behave responsibly. You want to get a birth control? She can go down to her local Walmarts. Better yet, her local Target. I looked into this. $9.99, $10 a month for the best state-of-the-art, I'm talking triple-grade A birth control, the best pill money can buy. You can have sex all day, all night. You will not get pregnant. What's the problem? It's $10 a month. Skip a movie, skip a meal to Burger King, skip a Starbucks coffee, and you can have all the sex you want, day and night. But don't ask me. And don't ask the Jesuits at Georgetown University to violate their conscience rights, to pay for something that goes against their fundamental religious beliefs. It's immoral. It's unethical. It's wrong. It violates the First Amendment. It's anti-freedom. And you want to see how stupid and desperate Obama is to get the feminist vote and to trump up this phony war on women? Check out this clip. You know, we can't go back to the policies that got us into this mess, as if there's not enough birth control in America. No, no, no. There's not enough condoms and pills in America. No, 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 no. You can get them at your local Safeway, at your local Walgreens. They give them out for free at Planned Parenthood. Any public bathroom, you can get a condom, practically. But no, 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 no. It's a big crisis now. There's a shortage of birth control. No, no, shortage of condoms and pills. We're going to go back to the 50s and the 40s and the 30s. And boys, roll clip 14.
The one thing we can't afford to do right now is to go back to the very same policies that got us into this mess. Of course, that's exactly what the other side has planned. And they make no secret about it. A lot of them seem like they want to turn back the clock to the 50s or the 40s or the 30s or maybe further back than that.
Oh,
and
yeah,
close doors of opportunity that we thought we kicked open a long time ago.
Long time ago, this is going back to segregation. This is going to go back to slavery. It's going to go back to the 1850s and the 1840s and the 1830s. There's no end to the lies and demagoguery of this man. Do you know what we'll be going back to? Literally, I couldn't make this up if I wanted to. 2 months ago. That's it. This mandate was handed down 2 months ago. We weren't paying for other people's contraception 2 months ago. That's when the ruling was passed down by Kathleen Sebelius and HHS. So if we roll the clock back to 2 months ago, this is now the new Dark Ages. So under Obama, we were living under the Dark Ages. This is how stupid and Orwellian their entire argument is. But now it's not enough with birth control. No, 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 no. Rachel Maddow, who to me, honestly, is becoming more and more of a shill for this administration every day. I'm not a fan of hers. I never really liked her. To me, she always strikes me as a sort of college freshman or college sophomore, kind of an adolescent who has this sort of smarmy, smirky attitude that somehow she knows better than her parents. You notice that whenever you see her, she has that sort of smirky smile, like somehow she knows things that you don't. Mommy and daddy don't know what I know. Now, this left-wing hack on MS Left BC was on Meet the Press with Alex Castellanos, who's a Republican consultant. And they're talking about this war on women. And Rachel Maddow now comes out, and it's what the left is now coming out. Well, there's a war on women. How's there a war on women? Because women make less than men. If you look at the wage disparities between men and women, women are making less than men. So ipso facto, logically, there's discrimination against women. And so you guessed it, Mitt Romney, the Republican Party, conservatives, and all those that support business and free enterprise, they're really sexist at heart. They want institutionalized discrimination against women. They want women to keep making less than men. And Alex Castellano says to her, you don't know what you're talking about. Boys, roll clip 15.
Women in this country still make 77 cents on the dollar for what men make. So if women don't make less than men?
Actually, if you start looking at the numbers, Rachel, there are lots of reasons for that.
Wait. Well, don't tell me the reasons. Do women make less than men for doing the same work?
Because...
Wow!
Well, for example, men work an average of 44 hours a week. Women work 41 hours a week. Men go into professions like engineering, science, and math that earn more.
Now, he makes a brilliant point. I've actually looked into this. Women, on average, work less hours than men, especially if they're married. And the reason why they work less hours? Because they also have to help raise children. So since women have to work less, they make less. But if you actually look at the statistics of single women and single men, especially those between 40 and 64 who aren't married, women make more than men. Boys, roll clip 16.
And I love how passionate you are. I wish you were as right about what you're saying as you are passionate about it. I really do.
That's
for
really
example,
condescending. No. This is a stylistic issue.
I'll tell you what.
My passion on this issue.
Here's a fact.
Is actually me making
can
a factual argument on it. Alex,
may I share one fact with you?
Share.
When you look at, for example, single women working in America today between the ages of, I think, 40 and 64, who makes more, men or women, on average? Men make $40,000 a year. Women make $47,000. This
Alex,
is how far the Democrats, Obama, and Rachel have to go to try to win this election. We're sitting here talking about the next president of the United States, and I don't know if Rachel knows this, but our nominee is this fellow from his name Mitt Romney. He's actually running for president, and you're talking about legislatures in Iowa.
I'm talking
this
about
is,
what the Republican
no,
Party
and the Republican
for
war on women. If Republicans have declared war on women, we're losing. Half of Republicans are women. Some of us have even married them. This is it's manufacturing a crisis. But here's a political question for Obama. When manipulating people becomes so obvious, you lose your political credibility.
Bingo. He wiped the floor with Rachel Maddow. He finally exposed her for the charlatan, the propagandist, and the hack that she is. I'm married to a woman. Why do I want my wife to be discriminated against? My wife is a career woman. Now, let me give you, it's a classic example. We adopted a boy 7-8 months ago now. My wife has now had to scale back her hours. She is basically working part-time because she's primarily taking care of our beautiful boy. Now, obviously, it's going to hurt her on the job market. Obviously, I'm going to start making more than her. Obviously, over time, I'm going to make even more than she makes. Now, that explains the wage disparity. But when she and I were both working, especially in our 20s and 30s, she made just as much as I did. So this idea that somehow there is discrimination in pay against women, yes, there's a disparity, but it's explained by a very simple fact. Women are not just workers, they're also mothers. And because they're mothers, and this is human nature, they tend to be more nurturing. They take more care of the children. Is there no depths to which the Obama administration and their leftist socialist cronies will not descend into to try to pit the genders against one another, pit the races against one another, pit Americans against one another, divide and conquer to win an election in November? It is pathetic. It is wrong. It is immoral. And more than that, women are our mothers. They're our wives. They're our sisters. They are our daughters. I'm speaking now as a man. You don't think I don't want them to have equal pay for equal work? What are these people talking about? And so my question to you is a very simple one. It's a two-pronged question. Do you believe that this Democratic attempt to manufacture a war on women, will it succeed come November? Will you buy it? Do you think women will buy it? And more than that, do you believe that men still unjustly make more than women, especially to the women callers out there? Do you feel that women are being given a raw deal on the workforce? Should they make more? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Jeff in Sacramento, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
I'll be short. 15 years ago, I used to work for the largest internet company in the world, and I went to a meeting with Dianne Feinstein, and a woman spoke about the inequality of women. You know what? I worked with women. I had women bosses, black, white, Chinese, and there is no inequality of women discrepancy in this job market. This is bullcrap. I don't know what to say.
Jeff, look, I've worked with a lot of women. It's not what it was in the 60s and 70s. Times really have changed. And I'll be very candid with you. And I'm speaking now from personal experience. All things being equal in the journalism profession, in the media profession, I would take a female candidate over a male candidate for a job. And I have in the past. I think they're superb workers. They hit their deadlines. They can write very quickly, file clean copy. They can multitask. They don't complain for the most part. They work extremely hard. And on the wages issue, I pay them at least as much as male reporters, if not more, because I want to keep them. Now, it does happen, and this is what Castellanos' point is. When they get in their 30s, many of them decide to have a family, which is a beautiful thing. But they tend to be out of commission, like my wife. She's going to be out of commission now for 4 or 5 years. I mean, part-time, but basically no longer as a full-time employee, as a full-time worker. When you come back into the workforce in your 40s, you've lost 6-7 years. So a lot of the people that were your colleagues are now going to be making more money than you, and you're going to have to catch up. But to me, comparing wages and what you make to having children, my wife tells me this every day, greatest decision she ever made in her life. was deciding to be a full-time mother and a part-time worker. And I say amen to her and amen to all the women. Tom in New York, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jeff Cooner, filling in for Michael America Savage. That's red, white, and blue dynamite, baby.
Thanks so much, Tom. What's on your mind, buddy?
Jeff, the big problem we're having is the Conference of Catholic Bishops sat down. They took the 30 pieces of silver. They thought they were getting a religious exception. They got schnookered by the Planned Parenthood president. Pope Benedict, instead of designer sneakers, designer much destruction to our Catholic faith, Jeff. What do you feel?
Amen, Tom. And I got to tell you, it's not just Kathleen Sebelius. It's that phony Catholic vice president, Joe Biden, and all the other Catholics who support this criminal, anti-Christian regime in Washington. They have sold the church down the river. They have sold Christians down the river. They have sold religious freedom and religious liberty and the First Amendment down the river. And it's about time Americans said enough is enough. Our basic conscience rights, our fundamental freedoms of, as Americans, is not for sale. And we will not be bought for no matter how many pieces of silver. We're not Judas. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America. Savage.